2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
KSL News Time 444. The three things you need to know this hour. First,
7-year-old Amelia Arredondo has been found. Police say she was taken from her grandfather's home, where she lives, by his girlfriend Bernice Quintana, who also lives at the residence. Apparently, Bernice saw the Amber Alert and turned herself in. On KSL News Radio's Hugo Ricard-Bell.
Second, Salt Lake City police say they were able to rescue a kidnapped 14-year-old through the Safe UT app. Third, our biggest traffic trouble spot.
Crash southbound I-15 at the Bangor Highway. It's been moved quickly to the right shoulder. Busy traffic, though, in there. Len Thomas in the KSL Traffic Center.
Beautiful sunshine today, but oh, the temperatures are cold. I'm Kevin Eubank.
Right now, we're at 34 in Salt Lake City. KSL's top national stories here from ABC News.
Another wounded victim has died. That makes 11 deaths, several others injured from the mass shooting at a dance hall in Monterey Park, California, Saturday night, east of Los Angeles. All the dead were in their 60s and 70s, men and women. Police say the gunman was 72, Asian descent, no prior criminal record. They say he shot himself to death yesterday in a van that had been described by witnesses. ABC's Alex Stone in Monterey Park.
Police in Hemet in Riverside County, east of here, where Hukan True, the man who investigators say carried out this shooting, lived, say earlier this month he twice visited the Hemet police lobby. While there, he claimed fraud, theft, and poisoning involving his family 10 to 20 years ago. He told Hemet police he would return with documentation, but never went back.
No word yet about a reason for the shooting. Police say after getting a warrant to search the man's home, they say he was making homemade gun silencers and had a lot of ammunition, hundreds of rounds, in the home. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for the in-depth on KSL as we deal with snow and cold temperatures. Salt Lake City is working to help people who are living on the streets. Mayor Erin Mendenhall says one of her goals is for the community to work with other cities to provide shelter for those without housing, which involves increasing their capacities.
So in December, Salt Lake City, South Salt Lake, and Mill Creek all signed emergency orders that allowed the winter shelters that are located in all of our cities to expand beyond the capacities that had been set previously for them. Now, that also meant that the service providers at those places had to staff up in order to be able to balance that increased need in the shelter facilities. They've been doing that work. There are beds available most nights, but we also know that the Presbyterian Church, with activists in the area, have mobilized, and when temperatures are below 20 degrees outside, then they do a movie night there at the church. People can come in and just have a warm place to be, not necessarily with a bed or a cot, but somewhere that's safe inside. Last night, for example, Salt Lake City Police and Fire and 911 were ready to connect and engage with people if they came upon people still on the street and let them know about the services that are available, help them connect with transportation to the shelters, and just really encourage people who may be not going into shelter when offered on warmer nights to get off the street because of the risk of frostbite.
She says the challenge is being met for the most part, but more needs to be done.
Yes, because the expansion to the capacity, it has grown, especially as the staffing has been able to pick up with the service providers, but it's not enough. We know we need more shelter. We have the fastest growing population in the nation here in Utah. And what I've seen over the last 10 years in this building is that we have a proportionate increase to our growing overall population of those experiencing homelessness. Our numbers of people unsheltered on the streets who don't fit into the system, meaning there's not enough beds for them, are tremendously small compared to every other state surrounding us, including Idaho, that's looking at more than 1,000 people. Here in Salt Lake County, we have about 400. Statewide, we're about 700. We're the strongest economy in the nation. There's no reason that the state of Utah can't get its arms around its homelessness issues. And we've started to see that with the last legislative session appropriating $55 million for affordable housing. And we hope to see more of that kind of support, because that is the kind of support that is cognizant and responsible for the realities that our state is facing.
Aaron Mendenhall, the mayor of Salt Lake City, optimistic that the situation will improve in the months ahead.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.